assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the 10th canto, chapter 3, but we're reading it from the Krishna book. It's entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna, but I'm actually only going to read very briefly from this chapter, and I'm going to read from some other places in the Krishna book as well, and from some other place in the Bhagavatam. It's all going to be about Krishna, but it's not all going to be about Krishna's birth, necessarily. So, let's just start. Birth of Lord Krishna. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, and one who understands them factually becomes immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance is explained in the second chapter of the 10th canto here, the prayers of the demigods. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. So, just one point on that. It talks about how this statement, one who understands them factually becomes immediately eligible. It means one who understands that the Lord's appearance, his birth, and activities are all transcendental. So what does that mean? It means more than just that you understand, you comprehend the idea. And like in America, they have this expression, put your money where your mouth is. Probably everybody's familiar with that expression. So basically what's being said, what's my understanding of what this means, to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth, appearance, and activities, is that you prepare to put your life, you know, your activities, where your life's belief is. In other words, to really understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance, birth, and activities means that you're prepared, you're willing to engage in devotional service. That's like putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak. You're actually prepared to do it, to engage in devotional service to Krishna, to follow the rules and regulations and engage in the devotional activities. Then you're understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth, appearance, birth, and activities. And of course, it doesn't end there. That's the beginning. And then gradually, as one does that, one engages in devotional service, then that conviction, and it starts off as like an intellectual conviction, transforms into an experience. And that's the process of devotional service. It's described very nicely by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Ado shara tato sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya tata anartana vritti. And then nishta, ruchi, ashakti, bhava, and prema. In other words, as one acts upon that conviction that, yes, Krishna's appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, therefore let me engage in devotional service. And then one does that, then one starts experiencing those different stages as one progresses through devotional service. So another point that should be made, could be made here, is that it's talking about, Prabhupada mentions here how Krishna appears at his own sweet will, his own sweet pleasure. Right? And a point that Prabhupada makes elsewhere, actually in the third canto, in a nice purport regarding a statement made by Uddhava, is that Krishna, another way of understanding this idea, is that Krishna's value as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not diminished by whatever form he appears in. See, like for instance here in you know, this, what we're reading now, Krishna's appearing in a human form, but as a baby. But whether he's appearing as a baby, whether he's appearing as a beast, whether he's, whatever he's appearing at, his value as the Supreme Personality of God is not diminished. Notice all the full potencies are there. And I mean, just to, you know, give the obvious example, when Krishna appeared as a baby, He was just barely old enough to open his eyes, if I'm remembering correctly. He killed Putana. Actually, I went through the Krishna book, and I was just thinking, I just tried to make a quick list of all the different things that Krishna did, which, you know, demonstrate that his value as the Supreme Personality of Godhead was not in any way impeded by the form that he was assuming at that time. Killing Putana, Trinavarta, revealing the universal form to Mother Yasoda, pulling the mortar between the two, you know, the twin Arjuna trees, and when liberating Nalakuvera Manigriva, killing Agasura, expanding, replacing all the boys and the calves that had been stolen by Lord Brahma, killing Kaliya, serpent, devouring, swallowing two forest fires, lifting Govardhan Hill, etc., etc., etc. You know, there's about a dozen others. So these are all clear, you know, demonstrations that Krishna, at least certainly in the form of Krishna, his potency wasn't limited by the body. Okay. Now, that's expressed in a very sweet way by the residents of Vrindavan. Is I am going to read something from the Krishna book, but I just wasn't going to read from that chapter. I'm going to read from this chapter called Wonderful Krishna. And this is a conversation that takes place between Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men just after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. See? So Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill when I believe he's 7 years old. So, you know, it's been 7 years now that they're watching all these amazing things happen one after the other. And, you know, now, and sort of like the most amazing would probably be Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill up to that point, although they were all, you know, completely amazing. So this is a conversation that takes place between Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. And it's not very long, so I'll read this. Wonderful Krishna. Without understanding the intricacies of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and without knowing his uncommon spiritual opulences, the innocent cowherd boys and men of Vrindavan began to discuss the wonderful activities of Krishna, which surpass the activities of all men. One of them said, "My dear friends, considering his wonderful activities, how is it possible that such an uncommon boy would come and live with us in Vrindavan? It is really not possible. Just imagine. He is now only 7 years old. How was it possible for him to lift Govardhan Hill in one hand and hold it up just like the king of elephants holds a lotus flower? To lift the lotus flower is a most insignificant thing for an elephant, and similarly Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill without exertion. When he was simply a baby and could not even see properly, he killed the great demon Putana. While sucking her breast, he also sucked out her life air. Krishna killed Putana demon exactly as eternal time kills a living creature in due course. When he was only 3 months old, he was sleeping underneath a hand-driven cart. Being hungry for his mother's breast, he began to cry and throw his legs upwards. And from the kicking of his small feet, the cart immediately broke apart and fell to pieces. When he was only 1 year old, he was carried away by the Trinavarta demon, disguised as a whirlwind. And although he was taken very high in the sky, he simply hung on the neck of the demon and forced him to fall from the sky and immediately die. Once his mother, being disturbed by his stealing butter, tied him to a wooden mortar, and the child pushed it towards a pair of trees known as Yamal Arjun and caused them to fall. Once, when he was engaged in tending calves in the forest along with his brother Balaram, a demon named Bakasura appeared, and Krishna at once bifurcated the demon's beaks. When the demon known as Vatsasura entered among the calves tended by Krishna with a desire to kill him, he immediately detected the demon, killed him, and threw him into a tree. When Krishna along with his brother Balaram entered the Talavan forest, the demon known as Dhanukasura, in the shape of an ass, attacked them and was immediately killed by Balaram, who caught his hind legs and threw him in a palm tree. Although Dhanukasura demon was assisted by his cohorts, also in the shape of asses, all were killed, and the Talavan forest was then opened for the use of animals and inhabitants of Vrindavan. When Palambasura entered amongst his cowherd boyfriends, he caused his death by Balaram. Thereafter, Krishna saved his friends and cows from the severe forest fire, and he chastised the Kaliya serpent in the lake of Yamuna and forced him to leave the vicinity of Yamuna River. He thereby made the water of the Yamuna poisonless. This is a really nice chapter to meditate on if you ever, you know, just want to kind of have a, how would you say it, like a view of the whole thing, you know, all this one pastime after another being nicely described here. Another one of the friends of Nanda Maharaj said, "My dear Nanda, we do not know why we are so attracted by your son, Krishna. We want to forget him, but this is impossible. Why are we so naturally affectionate toward him? Just imagine how wonderful it is. On one hand, he is only a boy of 7 years old. And on the other hand, there is a huge hill like Govardhan Hill, and he lifted it so easily. Oh, Nanda Maharaj, we are now in great doubt. Your son Krishna must be one of the demigods. He is not at all an ordinary boy. Maybe he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." On hearing the praises of the cowherd men in Vrindavan, King Nanda said, "My dear friends, in reply to you, I can simply present the statement of Gargamuni so that your doubts may be cleared. When he came to perform the name-giving ceremony, he said that this boy descends in different periods of time, in different colors, and at this time he has appeared in Vrindavan in a dark color and is known as Krishna. Previously, he had a white color, then a red color, then yellow color. He also said that this boy was once the son of Vasudev, and everyone who knows of his previous birth calls him Vasudev. Actually, he said that my son has many varieties of names according to his different qualities and activities. Gargacharya assured me that this boy will be auspicious for my family and that he will be able to give transcendental, blissful pleasure to all the cowherd men and cows in Vrindavan. Even though we will be put into various kinds of difficulties, by the grace of this boy, we will be very easily freed from them. He also said that formerly this boy saved the world from an unregulated condition, and he saved all honest men from the hands of the dishonest. He also said that any fortunate man who becomes attached to this boy, Krishna, is never vanquished or defeated by his enemy. On the whole, he is exactly like Lord Vishnu, who always takes the side of the demigods, who are consequently never defeated by the demons." Gargacharya thus concluded that my child will grow to be exactly like Vishnu in transcendental beauty, qualification, activities, influence, and opulence. And so we should not be very astonished by his wonderful activities. After telling me this, Gargacharya returned home, and since then, we have been continually seeing the wonderful activities of this child. According to the version of Gargacharya, I consider that he must be Narayan himself, or maybe a plenary portion of Narayan. When all the cowherd men very attentively heard the statements of Gargacharya through Nanda Maharaj, they better appreciated the wonderful activities of Krishna and became very jubilant and satisfied. They began to praise Nanda Maharaj because by consulting him, their doubts about Krishna were cleared. They said, "Let Krishna, who is so kind, beautiful, and merciful, protect us." When angry Indra sent torrents of rain, accompanied by showers of ice blocks and high wind, he immediately took compassion upon us and saved us and our families, cows, and valuable possessions by picking up Govardhan Hill, just as a child picks up a mushroom. He saved us so wonderfully. May he continue to mercifully glance over us and our cows. May we live peacefully under the protection of wonderful Krishna. That's the end of that chapter. So a similar appreciation was expressed by Uddhava. And I'm going to read that. We're probably getting pretty close to reading this in our morning readings because Suhas is reading from the third canto. But this is a very beautiful verse, Uddhava. I think Devamrita Maharaj gave class on this verse when he was here a year or two ago on speaking on Janmashtami. So I won't read the Sanskrit. But the translation is, alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast? Purport. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord. So this is relevant because, you know, he's the cowherd man, and they're talking about the mercy of Krishna, that he continually mercifully glances over us. So now Uddhava is, you know, Prabhupada's expanding upon this particular quality of Krishna here in the purport. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. In his babyhood, he, Krishna, was administered deadly poison by Putana, and a she-demon who tried to kill the wonderful baby. And because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know that the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby, was no one less than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee, Yasoda. Because that's, you know, relating back to that, the very first thing I read from that first chapter, that appearing by his own sweet will. In other words, he appeared, he became a baby to please his devotee, Yasoda. And as I mentioned, I got it from here, that his value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish. It's not affected by the bodily form that he's assuming. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or the shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He is always the Supreme. A living creature may, however powerful he may be by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. I shall read on. The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Then Prabhupada raises a question. He says, therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? What does that mean? Who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? That's just like another way of saying, well, understanding these things about Krishna, you know, how powerful he is, how merciful he is, how could somebody make a choice? How could somebody choose to do something with their life other than try to become a pure devotee of Krishna? That's, you know, it's just another way of saying the same thing. It wouldn't make any sense. And when you understand how great Krishna is, how powerful he is, how merciful he is, the only logical thing to do is make that choice. Okay, let me try to become a pure devotee of Krishna. And so just a couple comments here. We've been giving a wonderful opportunity to do that, you know, by Srila Prabhupada. He's given us, well, ISKCON, which, you know, Association of the Devotees, and so many, you know, so much facility. We have this temple, we have books to distribute, we have prasadam to take and distribute, ashrams, places to live for people who want to be full-on renunciate, dedicated. But the greatest thing, that contribution we receive from Prabhupada, is his own example. You know, Prabhupada showed us the example of how somebody could live as a pure devotee. And he gave such a great example of that, that he inspired other people to try to follow him. And there's been so many, literally hundreds of, you know, people who were disciples of Prabhupada, who, being inspired by Prabhupada's example, are trying to do the same thing. And some are being, at least in my opinion, have been pretty successful. I mean, just like last night, I was, you know, went into my home, and I was just doing this, that, and the other. I was just, you know, doing a whole bunch of things. And my wife just happened to be listening to a lecture Radhanath Maharaj was giving on the internet, just recent one week ago, Balaram's appearance day in Chaupati. And I was doing other things. You know, I just caught a few words here and a few words there, and that was enough. You know, I just heard phrases, you know, wow. And then I had to stop and listen a bit more carefully, and I just realized, wow, this is so good. You know, he's speaking so nicely. You know, just it was just so I don't know, just, you know, he's such a good speaker, and it was just the points he was making were just so interesting. It was just so, and it seemed like so natural and so effortless. And I was just, I couldn't help but just sit there and just, it just stopped me dead in my tracks, as, you know, as the expression goes. And I have to just go, wow, this is like, this is amazing. This is nectar. He's just so, this, he's just so good, you know. So I was thinking, he's not the only one. You know, there's so many devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who, because of being inspired by Prabhupada, have taken up Krishna consciousness, practicing it very seriously for years and years and years. And when you hear them speak, you can, you know, you could, you can appreciate the fruits. You know, they're Krishna conscious. Either that, or they're the best actors in the whole world. You know, which I don't think is the case. And a couple of days ago, I was. Somebody showed me, I can't remember what I was doing, but somebody just plunked a computer in front of my face, and they showed me a picture of Jai Pitaka Maharaj. He was in Malaysia, I believe it was. They just opened a new temple there. And they had him, he wanted to participate. You know, even in his condition, it's very difficult for him to just do anything, pretty much. But he's trying to, you know, he wants to fully participate in all the devotional activities. They hoisted him up on a crane so that he could, you know, participate in this ceremony to bathe the, you know, put something up on the chakra or something. I can't even remember. I didn't even catch what he was doing, but just, I was just so impressed by the fact that, you know, they actually hired a crane and lifted him up so that he could, you know, he has that type of a desire, you know, so he's showing an example of no material impediments. You know, he's just, his desire is so strong to serve. And these types of things are not going unnoticed. They're not going without effect. Just this morning, our guard brother Sachinarayanpu mentioned to me that he just came back from Korea, and he was saying that, yeah, you know, the leading Indian people in Korea, they've all, you know, he had a meeting with them. They've decided, yes, there has to be an ISKCON temple here. So now there's going to be a big, beautiful ISKCON temple in Seoul, Korea, and last night. I've been hearing, you know, Saras mentioned it a couple of days ago. Dhanavir Maharaj was having some problems with his health. So I thought, oh, okay, I should find out. I know Dhanavir Maharaj, you know, so let me find out a bit more what's going on. So I went up to Dundabats hoping to be able to find something. And, you know, so as soon as I got on the homepage, there's this picture. All of a sudden, I see Dundabats, and the next thing I see is this picture of a woman. There's this, you know, big, the whole screen is filled up by this picture of a woman. And I look and I say, who's that? And, you know, she looked young, and about maybe 35, 40 years old. And I, who's that? And I looked a bit more closely, and I said, I couldn't recognize for sure, you know. And then it worked out, it was this lady, Tulsi Gabbard, who's the U.S. Congresswoman for Hawaii. And there was one of those little arrows there, you know. So I clicked on and said, okay, well, what the heck, let me see what she has to publish. It's a little video of her. So, she, you know, and I, she spoke, she started speaking, and it was a video. And I was amazed. You know, this is a U.S. congresswoman. You couldn't have heard something more devotional. I mean, she's like a full-on devotee of Krishna, 100% full-on devotee of Krishna. And there she was. She was glorifying the importance of Krishna. The preaching could not have been more direct and more devotional and more, you know, I mean, she understood the philosophy, everything. It was all there. And she's, you know, going on for, it was, went for 4 minutes, you know, and it was just full on, just preaching, glorifying Krishna, talking about the importance of Janmashtami. We have to, saying how we have to surrender our lives to Krishna. I mean, everything. I was thinking, I mean, there was no audience. It was a dedicated video. Obviously, it was a video for that purpose. But still, it was pretty amazing. And it, you know, it just kind of struck me like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, she could be a president of the United States in the future. I mean, we don't know what Krishna's plan is. It's, she seems like, you know, she's definitely, you know, popular. And so anyway, so these things are there. And just one last point, and I'll read a little bit more. And that, you know, sometimes there might be difficulties in devotional service. And, but I was just remembering that there's something I heard in class. Something I read in the Bhagavad Gita, it's in the 12th chapter. Prabhupada says when a devotee is in difficulty, he's always thinking that this is the Supreme Lord's mercy upon me. Due to my past misdeeds, I should be suffering far more. But due to Krishna's mercy, I'm just getting a, you know, a token punishment like that. And so that's, you know, the basic mentality of a devotee, supposed to be, should be the basic mentality of a devotee dealing with those, you know, types of things. But also, about a week ago in the Bhagavatam class, I can't remember who was giving the class, but this in the purport, Prabhupada gave this interesting analogy. He was saying how just like an animal can't understand the purpose of a human being without being beaten, so in the same way, the conditioned soul can't understand the purpose of the Supreme Lord without sometimes, you know, going through experiencing some difficulties. You know, adiatmic, adibhotic, adidaivic. So I was thinking that's an, also an additional way in which we can, you know, understand maybe what's going on in our lives, that it's just Krishna. You know, once we make that decision to become devotees and we're trying sincerely to become devotees and there's difficulties, we could see those as Krishna's attempt to pull us closer, just like to give in, you know, to, how would you say, expand on that point, that analogy, that example. Imagine there's like a cowherd boy and he's herding some cows and it's you know, they're grazing in the pasturing grounds. They're having a great old time, you know, but it's getting late in the day and he knows he has to get them back in, you know, in a protected area. Otherwise, they'll be either stolen or eaten by wolves, tigers, jackals, etc. See? So he can't just call them and say, hey, come on over here. You know, they won't listen. And even if they have a rope around their neck and he tries to grab it, they're still going to, they're grazing. You know, they're thinking, hey, human, get out of here. Don't bother me. I'm enjoying myself. Let me do my thing. But the cowherd knows that I got to get him in there. Otherwise, they're just going to get stolen or, you know, or eaten by the animals. So in the same way, you know, until we're pure devotees, we're thinking that why is this happening to me? Why is Krishna, you know, why is this bothering me? I'm being bothered by this or bothered by that. It's Krishna. It's just like that cowherd boy. He's perceived by the cows as a disturbance because, you know, they're trying to enjoy the grazing. But really, he's their savior. You see, if he doesn't beat him with a stick, get in that, you know, get in the paddock or, you know, wherever they put them. Get in the fenced off area, you know. He's beating them with the stick and they don't appreciate it. They resent it. But he's saving them because if they stay out there, they're finished. So in the same way, these difficulties are sent by Krishna. You know, a lot of the times difficulties, they're sent by Krishna to beat us and get us into the protected area. You know, we think we know what's good for us, but sometimes we really don't. You know, I think I've given this example before. I'll give it very briefly now. Before I was a devotee, I had a job at a hospital as a male nurse's aide. And one of the things I had to do was get the people out of the bed and into a chair, or vice versa, out of a chair into a bed, because they couldn't do it themselves. And what used to happen is that, you know, the person would be in the bed, and they'd be calling out, oh, please get me out of this bed, because, you know, you think that it's very comfortable, right? It'd be great to lie in bed all day. Well, it's not. Your muscles get sore, and it becomes very uncomfortable, so you want to get out of it. So, they're calling out, please, get me out of this bed, get me out of this bed. And, they press a buzzer, and the light goes on and everything. And I come and say, okay, all right, no problem, I'll get you out. You know, at the time I was 18 years old, I weighed about 50 pounds more, you know, just had some strength and all. I said, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to grab you underneath your arms, and I'm going to hold you behind the head. You just grab me behind, and just as you feel me lift you up, just hang on there, and I'm just going to lift you right up out of this bed and put you in the chair, no problem. And it would have been no problem, you know. I mean, it wouldn't have been no problem, except for the fact that when you start to do that, what do? Invariably, there's the rails on the bed, and they grab onto the rails, you know. And I, you know, at first I used to try to explain to him, say, hey, don't do that. It's okay. I got you. Don't worry. It's safe. You know, you just relax, let go, and I'll just get you right up, pull you right out of the bed and put you in the chair. But they couldn't. They wouldn't do it, you know. And it was the same thing when I tried to get him out of the chair back into the bed. I used to have to call another person, and I would be doing that, and the other person would be prying open their hands. You have to have one on each hand so you could do it simultaneously to get him out of the bed and put him in. So it's like that, you know. We're like that. You know, on the one hand, we're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Krishna, please engage me in your service, you know. But sometimes, not all of us, and not all the time, but sometimes simultaneously, we're hanging on for dear life. You know, we have our attachments, and we're chanting Krishna, please engage me in your service, but don't but don't take away my money. Don't take away my position. Don't take away this. Let me still have this. Let me still have that. And Krishna's going, sorry, it doesn't work like that, you know. And he's trying to just pull us out, you know. So that's what's going on. And we should, you know, just appreciate it. So, you know, we're very fortunate to be in this situation. And actually, I'll read one last thing. About how fortunate the devotees are. It's kind of related to this point. I heard this yesterday or the day before. Rabindranath very mercifully reads every morning to the devotees when we take prasadam. And, you know, he reads from Prabhupada's books, and it's very nice, you know. He could just kind of sit down and eat like everybody else, but he makes that sacrifice. And he was reading from, just so happens, he was reading from this chapter, Prayers by the Demigods. And this really caught me when I heard it. So this is the demigods speaking, and they're offering prayers. It says, O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of the devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees. You still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. Okay, so that's the translation. Prabhupada, this is Prabhupada's purport. This is, you know, 10th canto, part 1, so this is Prabhupada's purport. Devotees generally do not fall down, but if circumstantially they do, the Lord, because of their strong attachment to him, gives them protection in all circumstances. Thus, even if devotees fall down, they are still strong enough to traverse the heads of their enemies, which was mentioned also in the Krishna book. I was just reading it, mentioned by the residents in Vrindavan. They made that same point. We have actually seen that our Krishna consciousness movement has many opponents, such as deprogrammers, who instigated a strong legal case against the devotees. We thought that this case would take a long time to settle, but because the devotees were protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we unexpectedly won the case in one day. And those who, you know, here who are Prabhupada disciples might remember that. You know, I was in New York City at the time when that was happening, and the response among the devotees was, we were shocked. You know, these things usually drag on. You know, I mean, who ever heard of a court case being resolved in one day? It's almost like, you know, the judge practically threw it out of the court. This is ridiculous. No, case this, you know. One day. And Prabhupada was, I mean, you know, impressed by that too. And he felt, you know, and Prabhupada, you know, knew more about legal systems from what we did, and he just took it as Krishna's mercy. He just felt there's no other explanation that this could happen like this other than it was Krishna's mercy. Anyway, he goes on to say, thus a case that was expected to continue for years was settled in a day because of the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is promised in the Bhagavad Gita, Kunteya Pratijanahi Name Bhakti Pranashati, O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. In history, there are many instances of devotees like Chitraketu, Indradumna, and Maharaj Bharat, who circumstantially fell down, but were still protected. So this is once, now this, we hear the theme of Krishna's mercy to his devotees, how he protects his devotees and how merciful he is to his devotees. Maharaj Bharat, for example, because of his attachment to a deer, thought of a deer at the time of death, and therefore in his next life he became a deer. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajate antikalevram. Because of protection by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, the deer remembered his relationship with the Lord and next birth, and took his next birth in a good brahminical family and performed devotional service. Suchinam srimatam gehe yoga brashta prajayate. Similarly, Chitraketu fell down and became a demon, Vritrasura, but he too was protected. Thus, even if one falls down from the path of bhakti yoga, one is ultimately saved. If a devotee is strongly situated in devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has promised to protect him. Kunteya pratijanahi name bhakti pranashati. So, you know, this is a good day. A day like today is a good day to try to reconfirm that our resolve, you know, and just resolve this, that we should try to be strongly situated in devotional service. Come hell or high water, just reconfirm. I'm going to try to be strongly situated in devotional service. And if we do like that, then Krishna's guaranteeing that he'll protect us. But even if a devotee circumstantially falls down, he's protected by Madhava. And Prabhupada elaborates upon this. Says, the word Madhava is significant. Ma, Mother Lakshmi, the mother of all opulence, is always with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if a devotee is in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the opulences, so all the opulences of the Lord are ready to help him. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishno, Yatra Parto Dhanor Dara, Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir, Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Wherever there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and his devotee Arjuna Parta, there is victory, opulence, extraordinary. The opulences of a devotee are not a result of karma kanda vichar. A devotee is always protected by all of the Supreme Lord's opulences, of which no one can deprive him. Tesham mitcha bayuktanam yogashemam vahamiyaham. That's except verse, I think it's in the ninth chapter, Krishna says, to those who ananyas chintayantomam yejana pariupashyate, tesham mitcha bayuktanam yogashemam vahamiyaham. Those who are always meditating on my transcendental form without deviation, you know, exclusively engaged in my devotional service, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. Thus a devotee cannot be defeated by any opponents. A devotee therefore should not deviate knowingly from the path of devotion. The adherent devotee is assured of all protection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So today's, as I said, a good day to try to, you know, pray to Krishna, please help me become an adherent devotee. Adherent devotee means just you adhere, you follow, we follow. Follow the rules and regulations, you know, all the basic stuff, everything we know we're supposed to do, and just make our best effort to do like that. And then, as Prabhupada says here, we're assured of all protection by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, I have no idea how long I've been speaking. How long have I been speaking? Not long enough. Should I read from the chapter, The Birth of Lord Krishna, or, I mean, some. Or is that it? I mean, I could stop there and ask if there are any questions or comments, or maybe somebody, maybe I said something that kind of sparked some realization in somebody, or. Yeah, Mata. Yeah, I asked myself that question this morning. I can't remember. You know, it's just at this point, it's just a general impression. But I remember, you know, it was just last night at the time. I just caught a few words here, a few words here, and I just, wait a second, this sounds pretty good. And I sat down, and I started listening seriously. And then Savas rang me and asked me to do this. So then I immediately started preparing for this. But I remember, I was just really impressed by just, you know, and that's not the first time. You know, that's like a regular, consistent experience.
What was the question?
The question? Her question? What did I hear Radhanath Maharaj say last night? I can't remember. But, you know, that happens regularly. You know, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that there's these two potencies, Prapshik, Papnika, and Avanaratmika, you know, the throwing and the covering potency. So, you know, they're always there. And until we're pure devotees, I guess we're always going to be influenced by that. So in other words, you forget. That's the, you could be in ecstasy in Krishna consciousness at one moment, and then like 25 minutes later, you could be in Maya. You know, I've had that experience of being at a morning program and getting, you know, feeling ecstasy in Krishna consciousness, being enlivened, and then going down to the prasadam hall, overeating, and then I'm back in Maya. So, you know, it's like that. But the point is that, you know, these devotees are there. You know, there's devotees like Radhanath Maharaj, Vaisheshika Prabhu. I mean, the list, you know, the names can just go on and on and on, and there's so many like that. And so we're very fortunate that, you know, to have their association. I forgot, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but that answered your question. I don't remember, but I know it's not the first time, and it's something that happens to me pretty regularly when I get the opportunity to hear some of these more advanced devotees speak. Okay. Yeah, Mata.
Even if they fall down.
Yeah.
But then it also said, it said knowingly, if they don't knowingly deviate. I was wondering what that meant.
Well, if you deliberately, you know, like in the case, the three examples Prabhupada gave, Bharat Maharaj, Chitraketu, and what was the third one? Yeah, Indraduna, yeah. Those examples, they were kind of like, oh, it wasn't deliberate. They did something, and as a result, there was some reaction. Chitraketu wasn't, he wasn't intending to offend Lord Shiva. He just got, Mother Parvati took it in the wrong way, and he got cursed. And
so if someone like breaks the principles, that's knowingly, right?
You know, yeah, that's a different story, really. But, you know, Krishna's very merciful. I mean, if somebody deliberately falls down, but then they realize at some later point that they what a mistake they made, and they make an attempt to come back, then, you know, Krishna's very merciful. He will overlook sometimes completely. And actually, there's one exchange with Prabhupada. I can't remember what the... I only remember what Prabhupada said. Once, twice, third time, no. So, no, somebody could... You know, you make a mistake and it could be forgiven once, twice. But, I mean, if you're deliberately falling down, obviously at some point Krishna is not going to be so liberal. But, you know, initially it's difficult to do everything. We're not coming from Vedic backgrounds. We're not used to following all these rules and regulations and being so strictly engaged in devotional service. So, you know, we can maybe not, you know, mess up a little bit. But if a devotee is, you know, just apichet suradacharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sarareva samantavyak samyag, how's it going? Yeah, even if a devotee is engaged in abominable activities, right? Or yeah, even if a devotee performs abominable activities, but if he is engaged in devotional service, then he quickly becomes righteous and he attains everlasting peace. That's what Krishna says. Declare boldly, my devotees never perish. So if you have that determination that despite the fact that you make some mistake, okay, you just pick yourself up, brush yourself off, and get back into it, then that's the qualification for being excused and getting Krishna's mercy, that you're determined not to give up despite the fact that you might make some mistakes. You know, that's the most important thing. And that's, in so many different words, Prabhupada, well, in much better words, Prabhupada says that in the purport to those verses. Okay. Anybody else? Anything? Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, Bhakti Eric? Just take one last one, I guess, and that's it.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you. Yeah, I just had a question. It's pretty much related to that last point as well. It's just something I was kind of curious about. Pretty much the same thing, like, but I was just, you know, like they say, like, I was just wondering how that applies to, like, advanced devotees or, you know, people who are, like, you know, even like gurus or something like that, you know, talks about, like, you know, because some places it says that, you know, somebody who's advanced, you know, who's on the platform of bhava or something, you know, they never fall down, or somebody who's, like, a guru never falls down or something. But isn't there some injunction that if they do, then, you know, they should be given a chance to rectify themselves? I was just wondering, like, if you had any idea where that comes from, or, you know, if that's Prabhupada who said that, or...
Yeah, no, it's from the, if I remember correctly, the Madhurya Kandambini. It's been a while since devotees have kind of talked about. And I can't remember who the author of that one was. Narahari Das Thakur or something like that. This just kind of came up a lot when, back in the middle, late 80s, when unfortunately there were a lot of, you know, devotees who were in high positions and they were having some spiritual difficulties. And that particular literature has pointed out that, you know, if somebody's in that position, then yeah, they should be given a chance to rectify themselves. You know, they should be approached and, you know, how would you say it, it should be pointed out, hey, you know, this isn't correct, and they should be given a chance to rectify themselves. And if they do, then things go on, you know, things continue on. And if that's not possible, then it's recommended in that literature that devotee take shelter of another person, you know, bona fide person. Swas, you want to say something? No, okay. So that's there. Okay, well, one last question. Yeah.
I was just wondering, adding to that, I was just thinking, you know, we all make mistakes. So there's nobody who hasn't made a mistake. And I think the important thing is not to seek necessarily the forgiveness of others or other devotees around us. It's to try and seek forgiveness from ourselves, to look within ourselves and work on yourself and think, I made a mistake. I got to try to forgive myself for making a mistake.
I that's an interesting point. I'll tell you what that means to me.
Okay.
What that means to me is don't get guilted out. In other words, don't allow yourself, because you make a mistake, don't get all mental and guilty and don't not allow yourself the opportunity to engage in devotional service. You know, you make a mistake, don't... Prabhupada said in the first canto, he says, you know, he quotes Chanaka Pandit, how you can take gold from a filthy place and a lesson from a fool. And so I remember something from a book I read. It was not a devotional book, but I think it's taking gold from a filthy place. It goes, most moralists agree that remorse is a very regrettable sentiment. If you have behaved badly in the past, repent, make what amends you can, and address yourself to the task of behaving better in the future. Rolling in the muck is not the best way to get clean. So in other words, that's forgiving yourself. Don't roll in the muck.
Absolutely.
You make a mistake, okay, acknowledge it, I made a mistake, and then give yourself a chance to once again engage in devotional service. That's the ultimate way of rectifying everything, engaging in devotional service. That's forgiving yourself. Don't you know, hold it against yourself so much that you feel so guilty that you go away from the association of the devotees or whatever. Let Krishna, if somebody's going to get punished, let Krishna punish you. Don't punish yourself. Just come forward, you know, make that have that inner determination. I'm not going to do that again, and then just get right back into engaging in your devotional service. Thank you very much. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Sri Krishna Janmastami Ki.